And welcome to this Property Life podcast. Welcome back with me, Caroline Claydon, and I'm joined by the beautiful Andrea Carrington today. It's International Women's Month, so it's lovely to have another lady on the podcast. How are you doing, Andrea?
Amazing. How are you?
All good. Hectic, hectic, busy. So I want to just touch base with you because you've got a two-pronged attack in your property business. You've got your buying for yourself, but also sourcing deals for your client base of investors. What are you currently seeing? You know, we're coming up to the end of Q1 in 2024. What are you currently seeing in the marketplace out there while you're searching for deals?
Well, I'm getting a lot of landlords looking to sell, you know, the old ones that don't want to do things properly. And they're going to have to kind of conform now to the proper way, let's be honest. You know, I don't mind the new standards because it just makes us more, it makes us better landlords, it's better for the tenants. So I'm seeing some landlords selling up, which is good for me because I'm happy to take their stock. That, you know, it's a bit of a challenge sometimes because you're having to fight with them on price, but that's the nature of the beast, isn't it? That's with like any deal that we look at, we have to kind of hustle on price. But so I'm getting quite a few bits of that. There's stock coming on the market all the time. You've got to look.
Yeah.
I'm out there all the time offering like a demon, as you should be.
Offering is like a demon. So in terms of the time scale, so you touched on something interesting there because you're buying from landlords. They come from a property investor mindset to a certain degree. Are you noticing a longer frame of time between an offer, initial offer going out, and then actually getting the deal over the line? That time frame, is it shorter, longer? Because it changes all the time depending on how keen somebody or motivated they are to sell. What kind of time scale are you working to from initial offer to actually getting it secured?
Well, again, it's very varied. So, for instance, and these were for my clients, both of these two. So up to yet in March, I've sourced two deals and we're only on the 12th. So I'm quite impressed with my little self. One of them is we'd viewed it because I work with my son on the sourcing part. We viewed it twice and offered and it got accepted. I mean, we kind of had a bit of to-ing and fro-ing. It probably took 2 weeks. So that was pretty good. The one I sourced this week, which was yesterday. Well, I sourced it on Friday, but we got all the contracts out yesterday. It's been 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah. But this is all about, you know, me kind of revisiting and chasing and things like that, as we do. But he sold it to someone else because I wasn't off to pay. And I knew that it wouldn't go through because I knew the buyer. So I was thinking, that's not going to work. So literally I've been following up, chasing and saying, what's happening? Then he was still adamant that he wanted this certain amount anyway with we've agreed a price that suits both of us. And that's now going into legals this week. So, yeah.
Wow. So that's quite a difference, isn't it? 2 weeks to 9 months.
Yeah. And but that's all of them. You know, sometimes it happens really quickly. It depends on the motivation of the seller. If they're desperate to get rid. And to be honest, because I'm in my area, I've been doing it quite a while. I am kind of a known quantity, I suppose. But I mean, anybody wanted to do this, you've really got to get out there and hustle your tushy off to try and get that going. But it's varied. It depends on their motivation and how greedy they are.
unrealistic they are. So what types of properties are these two that you've just sourced? Are they buy to lets or HMOs? What are they?
Both of these are HMOs. One of them is a professional HMO, and one of them is a house that's being converted into a HMO for a charity. So a charity have already taken that, but I knew that. So before I viewed it, I was talking to the charity about this property. So I knew they'd take it. I knew my buyer would be because he wants charity properties. And that's what we did. So we paired them up. So before we got the offer accepted, I said, it's going to be around this amount. Before I send it out to the database, I know this is something you'd want. Do you want it? And he was like, yeah, don't send it to anybody else. And he sent out all his documentation and his deposit and everything so that it was his. So, if you've got sellers that are really, really keen to get rid and you've got buyers that are like chomping at the bit, it's a quick process. they're not all like that because
Yeah.
I'm telling you the good story is this last month it was pain, but you know, we get there. You just have to push.
So the buyers that you have, are they generally like armchair investors that are here in the UK, or are they overseas?
A
What kind
little
of
bit of both.
demographic?
A little bit of both. What I tend to get is overseas, yes, because obviously I'm their port of call. They do, you know, they can't come, so I'm their eyes, and there's a, you know, there's a huge element of trust there because they're relying on me to do every bit of the process. So which is fine because that's what I'm set up to do. But the other investors are here in the UK, but they're usually kind of people that's got pots of cash and no time. Not any time because they've got like quite high demanding jobs. They don't live anywhere near an area that's kind of got a good strength on yields, good returns. So they tend to come to me to be able to do that because it's speedier. If they've got to come up once a month to in my investment area, I've already pr probably viewed and offered on the deals that they're going to look at, and then they've got to find the team, and I can do that. So. But then obviously in between all that, I find a deal and I think that's for Andrea this time. So I will take that one. So it's because I'm always looking, I'm always finding great deals anyway. So
So you're doing a number of transactions per month, depending on, of course, the follow-up and everything else. Now, we know that when our students first start out there looking in the marketplace, there's a level of frustration from them because they're dead keen. They've got all this knowledge. They're like pent up, ready to go. And it doesn't always go to plan straight off because the first offer they put in is likely to get rejected. We warn them about that. It's a really common sort of frustration we see in our students. Just as an idea, roughly how many viewings would you say you're doing on a weekly or monthly basis to give an idea of the level of activity?
I think in the when I was doing buy-to-lets, I probably did more viewings than I do now. Because I do a lot more HMOs, but I'd say we still do probably about 60 plus viewings a month, and that's a lot with direct vendor. We have agent stuff, landlord, you know, landlord stock through, you know, people that are connecting to me and saying I'm looking to offload. So and sometimes it's all with the same landlord. So I'm doing a lot of viewings, but they'll all probably be within a day or two. So I'm not. Right. Even though I think I'm busy, I'm not crazy. It's very sort of structured on what I look at. I don't look at anything outside of what I'm very focused on what we need stock wise. So I don't look outside of that. So, but when I was first starting out, because you told me I got to do 40 viewings a week, I did. I was honestly probably a great student. This is what you need to do. This is what you need to say. I was like, okay, I'll do just that. And Nick telling me, you know, you're not doing that. You telling me you're doing that. I did it because that was, I knew that was the way to success because you'd told me that's what we needed to do. And with the help of you guys coaching and mentoring me, it just happened because you taught me, I didn't learn.
So now someone listening to this or watching this on YouTube is going to think, I'm in a full-time job. Doing 60 viewings a month is not realistic with my family commitments and everything else. This is just not going to work for me, or this is the wrong time, or whatever. How do we manage people's expectations around their strategy and the level of viewings that they should be doing and offers they're putting out there?
Again, I think you have to kind of commit to doing this. If you want to make this work, yes, do. I mean, I had at that point quite a lot of hair salons. I think if you remember back, I had quite a few hair salons at that stage. And so I was working crazy. And I just thought I had to prioritize time frames in my week that were solely for this business. So when you were saying you're not watching telly, I didn't. I did all everything I was doing was in the aim to get to my financial freedom figure. So I literally did everything I could. So cancelled holidays. It depends on your commitment level. I'm not saying that's for everybody because you don't have to. I see people successful who haven't done that. But I was like, well, I was wasn't I'm older now because it was 10 years ago, but I was still not as young as some people starting out and I wanted to do it quick. So I literally just focused all my energy and attention onto that. and to that cause. So every waking minute was, other than the salons, was this. And so I did. But for anybody that's not got the time and they've got kids, I mean, my son was grown up, so I didn't have that pressure. I get that, but it's all doable. I mean, I see it happen all the time. I mean, I see people going on viewings with the kids. So it's kind of like they will make it work because it's benefiting them as well, isn't it, at the back end? So you just have to make it work. I see single mums doing it, and they literally, they're my heroes because they're working and they're parents and they're doing this and making it work. So anything's possible if you put the time in and you don't get distracted.
It's and I think it's seeing the small wins and the little progresses. It doesn't, a win doesn't need to be you've bought a property. The fact that you've got, five offers out in a 2 week window or something, that's a big win right
Huge.
there.
I think what I will say in the beginning when I was doing all those viewings, probably I'd say 50% of them were not suitable, but I just was viewing everything. And I think the quicker, the biggest win I think is once you figure out exactly what you need to look for. Because I was with one of our students yesterday because she was in my area, so I met for a coffee, as you do. And she was like, and I've looked at this. I said, but you're not looking for that. You are distracting your time. You are looking for this. Let's just stick with that, shall we? And she was like, yeah, you're right. So because we can get kind of busy doing nothing that's progressing your business. And I would say the focus to find, you know that you're looking for buy-to-lets, this many bedrooms in this area, in this price range, then just stick to that. Don't start looking at, as she was, bungalows with plots of land. I was like, no, that's not what we're looking for. Stop.
It is so easy though to get distracted when you first start out. And I do my piece of advice when people are getting going is, look, you've got to go and view in order to then maybe that property's not specifically what you're looking for, but you're meeting the agent that's showing you around. You no idea where that agent will then lead you to. But even just that process of being out there and in the space definitely helps. So we'll come back to that single mums thing in a second because that's a hot topic certainly this month. You mentioned the HMO that you sourced on that is going to be used by a charity, and this is a big subject close to our hearts is the giving back piece to our business. Yes, it definitely helps our business be very stable and diversified. But this social housing and charities and housing associations is such a brilliant, attractive strategy for us as investors and of course for our community in helping and giving back. Talk a little bit to our listeners and viewers about what you've been experiencing in the social housing space recently.
It's just bonkers, if I'm honest. I mean, I'm getting calls pretty much every day from different charities asking if I've got some stock for them because there just isn't enough. Honestly, there just isn't enough. It doesn't matter how many properties I can get my hands on. And I get messages from other investors saying, have you got anything in this area? Because I've got a charity looking. So we're kind of, because as big as this industry is, it isn't. We kind of all support each other within it, don't we? So I get phone calls saying, have you got anything? Or I'll ping it out and say, I don't do that area, but I know someone that does. So and we're kind of, it's huge, it really is. And I think the kind of they come to, myself and some of the other investors because we are doing stuff in this market, and they know what we're doing, so it's easy for them to don't know that at the end that's what the result they're going to get, so they're quite comfortable. But they still haven't
Okay.
got anywhere near enough,
What do you
is it?
need? So, what kind of charities are we talking about here? Because that's quite a broad,
My goodness.
spectrum, isn't it? So, you're saying charities, like what types of charities are you referring
So
to?
my son just does buy-to-lets. So he buys buy-to-lets, but all of his are in charities. I mean, he hasn't got hundreds of properties, but he's got quite a few now, and he's building them up, and he's trying to buy the one next door to one he's got at the moment. And the charity want it because they're dealing with women, and this is really a poignant, and I think partly why he does it, the women that's fleeing domestic abuse, and that's all he does.
Okay.
and it's such a soft day. It makes him so it's had a problem. Even though they maintain it, the gutterings come down to do with the next door's house. So I'm there tomorrow, and he's saying, "Mum, you're gonna have to go with the builder because she'll be terrified." And I was like, "It's fine, I'm fine. It's my builder. We're all good. We'll sort it." Because it's the yeah. Anyway, I won't go into the nuts and bolts of it, but it'll get fixed tomorrow. So, but yeah, it's that. The other one is homeless. The other one that I love, and I kind of have these charities that mean something as well. Because even though, obviously, yes, it's a business, I'm making money. It's also, it is the giving back. Kids that's been in care all their life, and they've now get to a point where the care system's like, "We've done with you now. Off you go." So there's charities and organisations that work with these children and put them into HMOs and then into flats, so they're kind of getting prepared and ready for living independently, and that's really, really nice. And then the homeless charities as well. So I also do one of my buildings has got in people that need supported living, so they have a lot more care and attention, and that's lovely. That is really, really nice. You've given them a nice home. It's kind of it's that massive win-win, isn't it? We've kind of got the ability of his portfolio, but we're providing a nice home for people that are in desperate need of that. So it's that totally where a lot of my energy goes.
So the charity, if they take on your one of your HMOs or one of your clients' HMOs, does that change the lending outlook on that asset? Okay, so talk a little bit about what that means.
So I know the lenders are, so and I work with specific brokers who understand that. So if I work with a brand new charity, I will speak to the lender and say, "This is the contract, this is what we're talking about, this is what they want." Then they'll tell me if there's lending available or not. Now that's if it's for me, but because I deal with a lot of international clients as well, and well, other clients, I always it's easier if they kind of use brokers that we are in touch with because they're bigger, they understand what we do. And I'll generally speak to them before and say, "I'm getting this is for this person. Will that work for them?" Or I'll get them to send it to their broker if they've got their own. Because we need to know they can get lending before anything. So there is lenders, it is challenging. And you'd think it wouldn't be. And I remember when I first started doing this, thinking, lenders would love this. They've got guaranteed money for the next 5, 7, 10 years. But that's not the case. They're concerned because if anything goes wrong, they've got to evict these people potentially, or that's what they're thinking, the risk averse, aren't they? So they're looking for what could go wrong. So again, it's also about you as the buyer or me as the buyer's longevity, and well, just they just need to understand that you're a good ambassador for that strategy, really, because they want to make sure that these people are always going to be safe.
Yeah, absolutely, because they have been vulnerable in the past. So if someone was listening to us and they were like, "Oh, I love the sound of this social housing thing, that's what I want to start with," and they want to do HMO social housing straight off the bat, having never been an investor at all, talk us through how that would work out.
It will be challenging. Just because the lenders will be like, "I don't know who you are. You've not done a property before. Let's." They need to see you first. They need to kind of see how you show up. So, again, back to my basics. I start off with buy to lets because that's what I was told to do. So that's what I did. And that actually, your buy to lets are your little troopers, aren't they, in your portfolio? Because they give you so much, not just the cash flow, but they give you the baseline for for more lending. So your buy to lets, your little troopers, aren't they, really, in your portfolio? But it just leads to more
I have
lending
to
opportunities.
It does, but I've had a really interesting time with my buy-to-lets. I have to admit that I kind of neglected them for a number of years because you buy them and then you're like, yeah, that was just something I did to get to the next stage, right? And then you just ignore them for a while. And I had taken the business decision not to increase my rent on any of them on an annual basis. I just thought, have the tenants there. It was in an area that wasn't seeing a huge amount of capital growth and I didn't see any benefit to, bumping the rent up 10, 20 quid a month every year or so. So I just didn't. And now the letting agents are saying, look, the market rent is in some cases like 350 quid higher than what I am charging. And it has been, look, I always knew that the inflation thing was going to work in my favor. I just didn't think it was going to be this sudden overnight. And I've just got this really big moral battle with myself. Like, I cannot put the rent up 350 quid a month. Boom. That it's probably why I've not heard from these tenants for a long time. They're probably thinking, God, might have
Let's not
forgotten I'm
bother
here. Don't tell her. Yeah, because they're
them.
paying
Don't
really
poke
yeah, don't talk to me.
them.
But there does come a point in the business where you're thinking, okay, this is ridiculous. Now I'm going to have to edge this up to market levels. So, I'm going to add about £2,500 cash flow a month onto my business, having not bought any more just by market conditions changing. And they are incredible little troopers in your business. And while you might ignore them and neglect them for a while, they will come good big time if you just play the game. So the social housing element, we're saying bite sort of cut your teeth on some buy-to-lets first, get them under your belt, then you can move into the social housing, the HMO arena, the giving back. We can even do, buy-to-lets, a couple of them, and then maybe do a buy-to-let into a social housing. It
Yeah,
doesn't need to
absolutely.
be an HMO, so that could work. But the broker and the lending is really the big message on social housing. Not every lender is up for it.
Yeah, it's very small compared to the market of lending out there. But I think the kind of some more have come on board, but still, it's they want to see you show up first as an investor. So,
Okay. So you have now been an active investor for 10 years. I bet you'd feel very 10 very long years.
I mean, to be honest, I was saying this only yesterday that I love this. I mean, I didn't. Most people start sourcing earlier than I did. I only fell into it because I've got international clients that I've mentored that were like getting deals sent, and I'm thinking they're terrible. I can do better than that, so I did. So it kind of it's grown from there. But I love the viewings. I love the hustle. I love the networking. I love all of the aspects because it's just my thing. So I kind of have found something that I enjoy. It has been. I'm not going to say it's not been challenging. Oh my God, yes, it does. So yeah, I think it's like when you give birth. You've had something, you think, oh my God, I'm not doing this ever again. And then it's done. You're like, I forgot about that pain. Move on to the next.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that might be our woman's superpower, right? And to celebrate International Women's Month, we're not having a day, we're having a whole month, ladies, so enjoy it. How have you overcome any, or what challenges have you faced as a woman in, let's face it, a male-dominated industry over the last 10 years? Give me some examples of things that you've maybe experienced and then how you've dealt with them.
I think, well, there's two really, I think, well, there's probably loads, but there's two that kind of spring to mind. One of them is old landlords. Some of the older, landlords. When I remember there was one really, and I think it was probably I was about 18 months into my investment, and I was looking at a landlord who was selling off some of his stock. So, and I kind of knew who he was because in my investment area, he'd have no idea who I was. But I went to see him, and he was like, oh, hello, girly. I was like raging. I was probably 45 at this point, so I should have probably took it as a compliment. But I was like, don't girly me. I was like, so I had a conversation about selling it. He said, is your husband coming? And I was like, I have no husband. It is me. He weren't interested in talking to me, so I didn't buy any properties from him just because he was that kind of old school world of male domination. So I literally just thought, I'm not talking to you anymore. You're a dick. So I haven't. So I think the other one has been builders, really. And I'm not saying builders are awful because they're not, but sometimes they can be a bit patronizing, like, do you want me to do that for you? And I'm like, no, I'm fine. And you have had to be tough with them. I mean, really tough, because I think they just kind of think, what does she know? I've literally had to be walked off site because I've literally had to dig my heels in. but it kind of shows the rest that I mean, and I'd like to work with my builders, and I do have a great relationship with them now because I've kind of built that up. But in the beginning, it was painful. I had to really be quite tough. I mean, this blonde hairdresser, nails done, I think they thought, Vanessa, she's not got a clue. So I had, and to be fair, in the beginning, I probably didn't have. But I had to kind of pretend that I did a little bit and was like, no, you can't do that. No, that's not going to cost that. So you have to kind of, they can be a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I've never even thought about the female thing being a thing until probably in the last couple of years or so, when the whole Me Too movement's become massive and this unconscious bias people are talking about. And I was at an event to celebrate International Women's Day on Friday, and I was invited by a firm of surveyors, which is a brilliant progressive firm of surveyors that have lots of women as surveyors, which is quite unusual. And they had a guest speaker who was this very successful real estate solicitor who had, you know, she was in her early 50s, very glamorous throughout her career, had just smashed everything. And, you know, she was properly inspirational. And the same question I've just asked you was asked of her. What challenges have you faced over your career as a woman in this male-dominated industry? And she said, none. You know, don't be a victim. Basically, I didn't even notice it happening. And it enraged a lot of the audience. They got really, really angry. And I was sitting there going, I don't think I've had any female thing, you know, holding me back or and then it's not until it started that a little seed in my head that actually our unconscious bias as women in this industry is we put up with a lot of nonsense that we've just desensitized ourselves to and accepted, or we then have to change our behavior to then be accepted or fit in to certain situations. And I started to think, actually, I have been on building sites where the builders are being absolutely inappropriate with their chat, like guttural, inappropriate chat, and I've had to join in and laugh, get involved in that guttural chat in order to be one of the lads on site. And you think, that can't be right. Is it right? Is that just the way it goes? I mean, it really does get you thinking. And I've been in finance meetings where they're all men in suits, and there I am in my jeans and my trainers, just giving it, talking millions of pounds here, there, and everywhere. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm doing this for the sisterhood. Check this out.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting topic when it is such a male-dominated industry. And I think women, are we being held back in any way? Well, you gave a perfect example there of a landlord calling you girly. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I was like, I was raging. I was literally like, I thought, you know what? I don't want to buy your house. I shove up your backside, really. So, but I felt it's not really held me back. I think you just have to, and again, this is one of something you've always said, put your big curl pants on and crack on. And I think, you have to. You have to just kind of get past it. And, you know, I think one of the builders once, he was saying, telling me something that, you know, it's got to look like that. I'm going, it hasn't. So I'm raging, and it was, oh, it put this boxing in, and I was literally hung off the boxing in off the ceiling saying, this needs to come down, it's awful. And he's like, it's got to be like that. And I was like, trying to pull it down like this. And he did come up and lift me up and went, I'll do it. And I've never had no bother from him then, because I was literally like, you will take it down. But if I'm honest, most of the time, the builders are really good. It's only the odd ones, but generally they're really good, and I have a good relationship, and we try and have a nice working relationship, but because that actually leans to more success, you don't want to have to be arguing with them. And I don't believe you should be audible with them, with the people, where people just,
If a woman is hardballing, you know, she's being aggressive or masculine, but actually we're just being assertive. And then the question is, why do we need to be assertive when guys can just sail through, you know? It's really interesting, because one of the audience members at this event, you know, she said, well, I'm not as confident as you.
Yeah.
And anyone listening to us, Andrea, and watching us will say, well, these two women are not, you know, not shy. They will put their heart on the sleeves and say it as it is and take no SH1T, right? We won't. But there are lots of women out there that want to invest in property that frankly are not the same personality type as us.
Mm.
And I do fear that there will be scenarios where that lack of confidence and maybe feeling unsafe on a building site or intimidated by a surveyor, it might actually hold them back. I mean, I've been scratching my brain. What advice would we give someone who is not forthright and is maybe a little lacking in self-belief and confidence as a woman in this industry? How can we help them? What advice can we give them to support and all I've come up with is literally leverage off someone else and like go with someone else. Get us, my eldest has a safe person, right? If he knows he's going to lose his mind or whatever, he's got a safe person, then maybe you just need to find yourself a safe person to go to these
Viewings and
meetings
I mean,
with.
I think you're right. I think possibly leveraging off someone else's time or space or whatever it is that you need. I think that's why yesterday I met that one of our students when she was like, because she's doing it on her own, and I was like, she was like, "Can John, I'll meet you for coffee." I was really busy, but she ordered coffee in yesterday, just because I knew that actually she just needed someone to kind of show the support and actually make her feel like, yeah, of course you can do this. You're going to be fantastic at this, and just a bit more support and a bit of, a few tricks of the trade, ideas of how to deal with things. But then what? Because it's a lot of that, isn't it, in the beginning? But I think the support and it is absolutely key. It was something I actually thought about this week, because I moved house last week, so I've had loads of trades coming in, joiners, plumbers, because I'm changing bits and pieces. And they've come to the house and I'm here on my own, and I did think it's weird, because I've took them up to my, because I'm having my ensuite being redone, and I took them up to my ensuite in my bedroom, and I'm thinking, this is weird, right? I've got a man that I don't really know in my house, and I thought I don't, and I thought I should fit, should I feel unsafe? And I don't, but actually I understand that you could. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of, and it was, everything's fine, nothing, but I can understand why people might feel a bit uncomfortable with things like that. But yeah, it was, yeah.
It's
But yeah.
strange the situations we sometimes put ourselves in. And to be honest, then I'm like, am I overthinking this actually? Because we've got
Yeah.
plenty of students whose hang up is something completely different. Not that they're a woman. It might be their color. It might be their language. English
Yeah.
isn't my first language. I can't speak English very well. Or I don't have any money. Or my husband left me. And now I'm a single mom and having to rebuild my life. Everyone has a story that
Yeah.
is like their hang up. And so maybe changing the dialogue of how we approach things in our heads, the dialogue in our heads might just help us. If you're like, oh, I'm not confident. Well, if you tell yourself you're not confident, guess what? You're not going to be confident.
Yeah. I had that
So
conversation with a client last week. I can't, I'm not good at raising money. Well, you won't be, because you've just told yourself you're not. It's a mindset thing. And it's something you have to overcome. And we've all had to overcome these. As confident as we probably seem now, I think I probably have always been reasonably confident, and probably so are you, in fact, yeah. But there's elements of when you're learning to do something, it's you're out of your comfort zone anyway. So you're having to kind of push yourself across that line of doing something that you totally is out of alien to you. And so we've all been through that point where and there's that fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
But you have, it is a mindset thing. I mean, I was told, get out your own way, you're talking yourself out of it, and it's not easy, but you have to, it's repeated. You have to keep saying, no, I can do this, I am doing this, it's done, I've got this, I'm all over this. So you have to keep reminding yourself of that. And we still have to do that. As soon as I do something completely out of my comfort zone, I mean, you've just done something epically that I would absolutely be terrified of doing, that's out of my comfort zone. But it's, and I'm sure when you first started doing it was like, bloody hell, this is epic, because the hotel's huge, isn't it? It's a big deal. So we're not talking a few hundred thousand, we're talking millions. So you kind of, but it's again, you've put yourself in that space. But I think in a way, it gets easier, because you've been out your comfort zone that many times that actually it gets easier.
I know, I did think to myself, God, when I started, raising 15 grand for a refurb was like massive. Like, absolutely. Like, how on earth am I going to find 15 grand? Well, 15 grand back then is the equivalent of me raising 1.5. It's just like, oh God, but I know I'm going to do it. It's
Yeah.
just different zeros. The more experience, the more advanced you get, the bigger the problems, the better the problem solver you become. So it's all a you'll evolve as you go. And I think if you're not testing yourself, then what's the point?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's exciting times. I'm off to what I'm actually off to view a 37 bed hotel in London that's on the market for 9.5 million next week. So we'll see how that goes.
You blow my mind. I remember you telling the story of when you had to raise that 15,000 in the beginning and how emotional that was. And then I've watched you going through the raising the money to do the hotel. You don't seem quite as you like, yeah, well, I think it's because you've already done it before, so it's kind of like just gets easier. But that's insane.
Yeah, I've definitely had a wee word with myself because I felt quite stressed out of all my, sort of property life. 2023, I definitely consumed the most alcohol that year, kind of cope with it all. And I knew I was like, I'm using alcohol as a crutch, but it's short term. It's short term, and I just had a word with myself and thought, actually, I can't remember what I worried about 2 years ago, so there's no point in worrying. So I'm just not going to worry because it'll be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, it's not the end. So let's just crack on.
Yeah.
So it's quite a good philosophy. It's working so far, and I'm not drinking.
Are you not?
No, well,
Oh.
I have the odd wee glass, but
Yeah.
nothing like it was in
It's not
2023.
excessive.
That was the year of the drink. But yeah, no, it's been brilliant catching up with you. And I think
You.
women out there that are feeling that they're lacking in confidence, or that they're struggling, or they feel unsafe, then please do reach out to us fellow
Yeah.
sisters. We are happy to help in any way that we possibly can. You can find us on Property Wealth System Community Facebook page as well. But join us again on the podcast, This Property Life, for some more brilliant content again next week. Thanks, Andrea. Take
Thank
care.
you, Caroline. Thank you, ladies.